This is KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, here on NPR One. Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway.
I'm Tom Wilmer reporting from Tampa, Florida. Come along and join me for a conversation with Bobby Newman. We're at Newman Cigar Company, the last operational cigar manufacturer in America.
That's correct. Yeah. Yes, sir.
On another subject in your life that you touched my heart, has everything to do with Southeastern guide dogs. Tell us about your connection and how that came to be.
I'd love to welcome to Cigar City, Ybor City, Tampa, Florida.
How did you come to be connected with Southeastern Guide Dogs?
Great question. 22 years ago, 1999, we had had two bad experiences with dogs that we had gotten for our two young sons. One was a Jack Russell, and we had saw the show, Frasier. We loved that dog. I told my wife, this is a children. They're both under 7 years old. Little boys, little girls often love animals. I told my wife, that's the perfect dog. You know, it's small, it's calm. So we got a Jack Russell Terrier, and it was a disaster. It cornered our cat and would bark all night, and it was like on amphetamines. And my wife never cries, and she called me after a week. She said, we have to get rid of this dog. So we sent it back to the breeder, and we made a worse mistake. And thank God America seems to have shut a lot of this down. Puppy mills, like out of Arkansas. When I think about it, it gives me claustrophobia. Every mall in America had pet stores, and I used to see grown golden retrievers in a cage all day long. That's awful, awful. The reason I'm saying that, my wife got a Cocker Spaniel, and my mother warned us. She said, they bite, and you can't housebreak them. Well, bit both kids and me, and we couldn't housebreak, so we gave that dog away. My mother used to be with Moss Brothers, which was owned by Allied Department Store on the west coast of Florida. I saw one of her old friends that had worked with her, and my mom was at Saks Fifth Avenue in 2000, Design Salon and West Shore Mall in Tampa, and she called me up and she said, I just saw one of my old friends, and she has a black Labrador retriever with a blue coat that says Southeastern Guide Dogs. It was drinking water out of a silver goblet in the second story of Saks Fifth Avenue. That dog would be great for you and your kids. It says Southeastern Guide Dogs. Why don't you call them up and go down and see if they have any flunkies? I went down there with my kids, talked to Michael Sargent, who was the founder and executive director at the time. Again, this was 2000. He gave us a 18-month-old Goldador. It was a half a golden retriever, half a lab. That's her right there. Her name is Millie. When she's 6 weeks old, a big dog there, precious. She had hip dysplasia. This dog made Lassie look like a fierce animal. Just 18 months old, brought her home. Take her home for 2 weeks. If you don't like her, bring her back. I felt like we won the lottery. Perfect dog, sweet, kind, patient, loved the kids. Just incredible. So that's how we got involved with Southeastern Guide Dogs. And I've been on the board since 2000, and I told my wife I felt like I was being prepared for something else. What that something else turned out to be was 9/11. Shortly after I joined the board, the Twin Towers fell. And that started the Afghan-Iraqi global war on terror. Tom and I are talking to you and Laura from Ybor City in Tampa, Florida. 6 miles from here is where the entire global war on terror is being fought at MacDill Air Force Base. Special Operations Headquarters is there. The Green Beret, Navy SEALs, Army Special Forces, Marine Special Forces, and then Central Command is also there. Lo and behold, I'm at a Rotary meeting in 2004, and the commander, four-star General Doug Brown, was a speaker, and he was talking about what Special Operations does. I went up to him afterwards, told him about our program, what we're doing. He said, you need to see Secretary Rumsfeld. Tell him about that. He said, I'll take you up there. We took our executive director at the time and his dog from Southeastern Guide Dogs and Millie. Secretary Rumsfeld could not have been more gracious. He loves dogs. And this was in 2006, a year or two later. He was relieved of duty by George Bush II, and Secretary Rumsfeld sent me a check for $40,000 made out to Southeastern Guide Dogs.
Wow.
At the time, that was it took us, publicly we'd say this, in private, it took us 2 years and $40,000. Today it takes us still 2 years, but $70,000 plus to train and raise these animals, and they're given at no charge. We cover all 50 states. If you're blind, you need a guide dog, you can come to the school and spend the 3 weeks there. The meals are provided. You're given this magnificent animal to help you get through life. So again, talking about being prepared for something else, I get a call going back to 2004, 2005. The first American serviceman to lose both eyes in the global wear and tear was a young Marine named Michael Jernigan from St. Petersburg, Florida. I did not know him, but I got a call from Central Cigar Company, one of our retailers in St. Petersburg, that telling us that one of our customers, Michael Jernigan, who smoked Diamond Crown and Arturo Fuente cigars, was severely injured in Iraq, and they wanted me to know about it. And I mean, I didn't know him. There's nothing I could do. The next weekend, his story appeared the entire front page of the St. Petersburg Times. It was a horrendous story. What happened? Michael Jernigan, 25-year-old Marine, was riding in a Humvee. He was in the machine gun turret above the vehicle, and they ran over two captured 155-millimeter howitzer shells, and it killed the driver, took Michael's entire forehead off in his eyes, and if it had been Vietnam, he would have died because of what's happening with military medicine. They saved him. I called his mother and said, we have to get your son would love to get your son a guide dog. Came down to Southeastern Guide Dogs, which is in Palmetto, Florida, which is just south of the Hillsborough County line. It's outside of Bradenton in Sarasota. And he had something that most Americans had never heard of. It's called post-traumatic stress disorder. I grew up after World War II. We used to play Army. I was born 6 years after 1945, and we'd play Army, and there were fathers in our neighborhood that their hands were shaking all the time. I remember asking my father, Dad, what's wrong with Mr. So-and-so? And they said, well, he's shell-shocked from World War II. Today we call it post-traumatic stress disorder. So Michael had PTSD. If what happened to him had happened to me, I would want to kill myself because he lost a tremendous TBI, tremendous brain injury, plus he lost his eyes. And when it rains, it pours. So he was married. His wife was a flight attendant at Southwest Airlines, and she couldn't handle it. She took everything out of their apartment. She emptied their bank account and disappeared.
Wow.
I mean, Hollywood cannot make up a sadder story. So here he is. Michael Jernigan gets his guide dog because of post-traumatic stress, and it didn't work out. And he came back a year later and called me and said, I'm ready for a guide dog. We got him a guide dog. He became our a national spokesman for Southeastern Guide Dogs. He and I started a program called Paws for Patriots. It was the veterans division, if you will, of Southeastern Guide Dogs. Fortunately, in this terrible global war and tear, there have been very few of our American servicemen and servicewomen that have been blinded. But however, that's the good news. The bad news is there's, according to whatever media that you believe, it's Wall Street Journal, New York Times, or Washington Post, there's between 300,000 and 400,000 young men and women have come back from the global war and terror with different arrays of tremendous, challenging post-traumatic stress disorder. It's a known fact. You read it and hear about it all the time. There are 22 veterans a day committing suicide. It's a shameful in our country, as wealthy as our country is. So we've started the program, and we've given out over 250 service dogs to veterans. We've never lost not one man or woman to this terrible malady of suicide, and we've given out over 4,000 guide dogs. If you do the math today, it takes 2 years and over $70,000 per dog. So we cover all 50 states. There's no charge for our services. The school is 33 acres. The school is so progressive. Our CEO has been with us now 14 years, Titus Herman. We always want to push the goalposts back further. The reason I'm telling you this is that People Magazine, there's a three-page article about Southeastern Guide Dogs' latest endeavor, and now we're training dogs to sniff out for COVID. And we have one of the dogs, Yellow Lab. She's at Doctors Hospital in Sarasota, Florida. We got the idea of a group did this in United Kingdom in England, and at the height of the COVID, one dog could examine 1,000 people a day, and versus the way we're doing it now, mm-hmm. where they shove the Q-tip up our nose.
That's
and so
incredible.
Forth. It is, and it's.
You told a great story about the seizure dog that could sense. That's great.
Well, it is, and I won't mention his name probably because of HIPAA violation, and he'll kill me. He's a Green Beret. The movie 12 Strong, and I highly recommend everyone that's listening. The movie 12 Strong was the story of what happened right after 9/11. 2-3 weeks after 9/11, these Green Beret, the A-teams, they were flown in on Black Hawk helicopters. They met up with the CIA American operative in Afghanistan. The only tribe that was fighting the Taliban was the Northern Alliance. So this one group, this A-team, led by Captain Mark Nooch, who, by the way, he's on the speaker circuit, too. You should talk to him, dear friend. So the Northern Alliance had no way to transport these 12 brave Green Beret, so they used horses. They became known as the horse soldiers. And they were able to defeat these 50,000-man Taliban army by pinpointing where the Taliban was with the Northern Alliance, and they just bombed the heck out of them. And a handful of these men from this Green Beret A-team portrayed and 12 strong live in the St. Pete, Tampa area, and they started the Horse Soldier Bourbon. The reason I told you the story is one of the men that came back, Green Beret, had over 30 deployments. He came back with seizures, and he has one of our dogs. If you're going to have a seizure, you throw off an electrical impulse, and they start pawing at you, and they say, "Dad, listen, you better sit down or lay down because you're going to drop down." Being in the cigar business, I was doing an event 3 years ago in Orlando, Florida, a Diamond Crown event, and this Green Beret was promoting, along with one of his sidekicks, Horse Soldier Bourbon. He had one of our dogs, and I asked him how the dog helps him. So we've become very close friends ever since.
That's really cool. Tell us a little bit about that 2 years or year plus of training. That's incredible.
It is. It's a beautiful program. People can go to guidedogs.org or Southeastern Guide Dogs, the website. We do all of their own breeding in-house. That sounds kind of funny, but we do exchange breeder dogs to keep the line stronger. We have a tremendous breeding department. We're very close, we think, to get breeding out the hip dysplasia, which are in a lot of large dogs as well. So the way it works, statistically, for every 10 dogs that we produce, they're born in Southeastern Guide Dogs, the smartest dog out of the 10, you can tell very early, the one with perfect eyes, perfect disposition, highly intelligent, perfect elbows and knees, male or female, is pulled out of the program, that becomes a breeder dog, the model dog. That dog, if it's a female, she'll have 3 litters of puppies. And then if it's a male dog, they can go on, they can last a lot longer. Then, when the dog's around 9-10 weeks, they're giving to a puppy raiser family. Being a puppy raiser, you have to love the mission. It's a lot of work. You have 2 Saturdays a month. You have to go to a meeting. We have puppy raiser managers. It's all volunteers. It looks like the New York City phone directory. And you've got to go through page by page. How do you housebreak the dog? How do you socialize them? Where do you take them? What do you do when they bark? What do you do when they don't want to eat? The whole program. And the average puppy raiser, we have over 300 puppy raisers, primarily Southeast United States. We have a whole contingent in Texas. But they get the dog around 9-10 weeks, and they'll keep them 12 to 16 months, depending on the maturity. Then they have to give them back to the school. It's like giving back your child, your daughter, or your son. Then one of our trainers would teach them how to become a guide dog. If the dogs during this process, if they express an unwillingness to work, or they don't want to become, for whatever reason, they can't stay focused while they're being trained, they're distracted with food or a squirrel or another animal, then they're pulled out of the program. So they can't be a guide dog, then we turn them into a vet. We call them a veteran service dog. The guide dogs know 40 commands. It's amazing. And one of the most important commands is the find command. Find the door. Find the elevator. So if you're a blind person, you walk into a doctor's office, you tell your guide dog, find the chair. And they'll find an empty chair, and then that's how they do it. or when you're downtown Tampa or downtown Los Angeles in a building, they find the elevator. So the find command, find the door if you're in a restaurant or another public place or a private place. So these are some of the 40 commands. The dogs that don't make it, they're retrained to become these are always already great dogs, but if they're not perfect, they cannot be a guide dog. So to become a veteran service dog, we teach them another 20 commands. Two of the most important is watch my back. So if you're a veteran, male or female, and you're walking through Walmart or Walgreens, or Costco, you can't see around the corner, give them a command and they'll go in front of you and around the corner. If they don't see anybody, they'll come back and they'll start nudging and they'll tell the veteran, hey, it's good. There's no one on the other side. And you can imagine if you're in Iraq or Afghanistan for a year, you don't know what's behind these doors. The most important, perhaps, command is the hug command. So if you feel a lot of stress as a veteran, you're having a bad day, whatever, give them the hug command. The dogs will put their paws on you.
Are they verbal commands or
These are all verbal. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Although we're very proud to say, and it's a lot of extra work for the school, but we have given guide dogs to people that are blind and deaf. We were talking about Helen Keller a little while ago, and that's all done by sign language. Mm-hmm. These are like the PhD, the Elon Musk of the dogs. So that's how the program works. And
How about the process once you matched with a veteran?
Right.
That person comes to the school, right?
Right.
And they live there?
Right.
Talk about the
absolutely, yeah,
day
Tom,
and day.
Yeah. So when, because these dogs were raised by volunteers, and even if they were paid, but these puppy raisers put a lot of time and effort, their whole heart and soul in there. So these dogs were raised with a lot of money, a lot of love, a lot of focus, a lot of attention. So if you're a veteran, you can apply online. If you call the school, Southeastern Guide Dogs, they say, please apply online. But they're going to go visit where we send a trainer out. If you live in, Tom, you live in California. Laura lives in Tampa. They'll send a trainer out, not to be disrespectful to the veteran or to a blind person, but they want to make sure you're not living in your car or on the street, because these dogs were raised, they're indoor dogs, they're raised with a lot of dignity and love. So once you qualify, the only expense is you have to just fly yourself or drive yourself down or take a bus down to Southeastern Guide Dogs.
And they're located where?
They're down in Palmetto, Florida, which is right outside Bradenton, Sarasota, Florida area. It's 30 miles south of Tampa. So you're there. If it's a service dog, veteran service dog, you're there for about 10 days. All the meals, everything, you just show up. You have your own room. And if you're an older veteran, I'm an old guy, although I don't walk slowly, but there's a science to this. If you're old and slow, you'll get a dog these are all 18 months to 2 years old, a dog that it's maybe a low-energy dog. If you're a young veteran that needs a service dog and you're full of piss and vinegar, you get a high-energy dog. We're very, very good at matching the dog to the person. And the training, you're there, again, for like 10 days for the veteran service program. And you have access. We will come see you once a year, wherever you live, make sure everything's working well, making sure everyone's happy, the dog's happy, and you as the veteran is happy as well. It's a great program.
A little bit more about the teaching of that relationship between the dog and the person.
Right.
When you're there.
So the veteran will come in, and they'll be with their instructor for a straight 10 days. There's no days off. So, because we want to take advantage. These people are coming in, the veterans are coming in. Their time is valuable as well. So they learn the basic, how do you take care of the dogs? What do you do when, with the signals, if they're hungry, if they go to the bathroom? How do you clean up after the dog? How do you play with your dog? Because of the ADA, the American Disabilities Act, the veterans, they do not have to have, these dogs have the same access to the public area. If it's a restaurant, any place that's open up to the public, these dogs are allowed to go in. They do not have to wear a coat. They don't have to have any type of harness. They have to be on a leash, of course. And most of our veterans, 99%, they're given two sets of look like coats or capes that they keep on the dog. And they do this. It's a Southeastern Guide Dogs. Most of them, they say, please do not touch, do not pet. The dog's focus needs to be on the veteran 24/7. It's interesting. The veterans, they always ask, can we sleep with the dog? Officially, they're supposed to be by your bed. 99.99% sleep with the dog, which is wonderful. Like I said, we're so proud we've never lost a veteran to this to suicide that has one of our dogs.
To learn more about Southeastern Guide Dogs, and I presume that you depend on people to donate, to underwrite, correct?
Yeah, it's an important point. Thank you. We don't take federal, state, or local monies. And the reason why, we only take private money, foundation, mm-hmm. corporations, individuals. And the reason why, we don't want the federal government to tell us how that we have to use a chihuahua for a guide dog or something. Yes, it's a beautiful program. I hope that you will all go down to visit. Everyone who comes down there, it's like going to Disney World.
Yeah, probably life-changing along this. To learn more about Southeastern Guide Dogs, do you have a go-to website?
Yes, sir. Guide Dogs, with an S, guidedogs.org. And we have wonderful videos, testimonials from our young veterans and older veterans. We like to say that our sacred mission is we serve those whom cannot see and those whom have seen too much.
Wow. That's pretty powerful. Bobby Newman, Lifetime Board Member, Southeastern Guide Dogs. What an honor to meet and visit with you.
Well, thank you, Tom, and thank you for letting us tell our story. We appreciate the opportunity, and thank you, sir.
It's my honor. I'm Tom Wilmer, reporting from Tampa, Florida. We'll see you down there.
Underwriting support for Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer is provided by Nashville's Big Backyard, a nonprofit economic initiative focused on rural destinations along the fabled Natchez National Parkway. With a focus on rural communities, such as Leaper's Fork, not far from Nashville, the Big Backyard journey traverses through Tennessee's southwest quarter, down into Alabama's legendary Shoals region, the mothership of American music. The featured rural community's common thread is historic architecture and a timeless, charming small-town atmosphere, some with a river running through it. The diverse attractions of the featured communities include the amazing Elephant Sanctuary in Hohenwald, where retired circus elephants come to retire in peace, and iconic destinations like Northern Alabama's Shoals region, where you'll find one of America's most iconic Frank Lloyd Wright homes and two of America's legendary recording studios that have been etching American soundtracks since the early 1960s. For example, Muscle Shoals Sound Studios in Sheffield, Alabama, opened in 1969, instantly started marking up the charts with number one hits by recording artists like the Rolling Stones, Willie Nelson, Wilson Pickett, Linda Ronstadt, Rod Stewart, and Paul Simon. Nashville's Big Backyard's ardent promoters include Mike Wolf, host of History Channel's American Pickers TV series, who provides a surgical contextual lens focused on Nashville's Big Backyard's diverse initiatives, and Liz McLaurin, president of the Land Trust for Tennessee, an equally passionate supporter of Nashville's Big Backyard's greater good elements through the Land Trust Preservation Initiatives. To learn more about the program, log on to nashvillesbigbackyard.org.
You've been listening to the Lowell Thomas Award-winning travel show Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer, a featured podcast on NPR.org's podcast directory. Produced by California Central Coast NPR affiliate KCBX. You are invited to subscribe to Journeys of Discovery with Tom Wilmer on NPR.org, NPR One, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and more than 20 other podcast channels around the world.
My name is Roseanne Cash. I listen to WNYC in New York. In fact, NPR is all I listen to. And if I didn't have NPR, I would feel like my lifeline to the world has been cut. So, yes, please support your local NPR station.